welcome to the Climate Tech Talks. I'm your host, David Contreras, an energy professional with over 12 years of experience in the sector. We will explore in this series, along with CEOs, founders, and the leaders in the clean and climate tech sector, the different pathways and technologies that will drive society towards a net zero future. Please join us. The views expressed in this podcast are my own and do not reflect the opinion of my current employer, TES. In this episode, you will hear from Kenneth Vaswatten. He's a leader in offshore engineering teams, both in oil and gas and lately in the offshore wind sector. At the time of this episode, he hadn't revealed his latest news, but now the cat is out of the hat. And he is the current CEO of a newly formed company, Deep Wind Offshore, looking at providing renewable energy and electricity to Norway and Europe. We had a great conversation about building teams and how you can transfer skills into one sector to another. I hope you enjoy it too. Hi, Knut. Welcome to the podcast. This is our second episode and really privileged to welcome you here. I would like first to introduce you, or maybe you could do it yourself. So, Kenneth Vaswatten, who are you? Can you tell us a bit of, you know, your experience? I know that you have 22 something years of experience in the industry, oil and wind. But can you walk us through a bit of your journey in the offshore industry?
Yes, certainly, David. I'm really pleased to be here. So I'm Knut Vaswatten. I think I was born back in the 70s, and when I finished school in Norway, certainly at that time, it made a lot of sense to seek opportunities in the oil and gas sector. So I went to Newcastle to do my studies and studied naval architecture, and from there, returning back to Norway, it made a lot of sense to join the oil and gas sector. I mean, at the time, it was a substantial industry. It has been ever since, and it remains a big industry in Norway. So I've certainly had a great career in oil and gas, and been able to kind of live the different stages or different technologies that that industry has been through. Back in the late 1990s, I was working on projects at the time seen as the last oil and gas platform being built in Norway. Fortunately, that has not been the case, but that's kind of an indication of where the oil and gas industry with upturns and downturns, and then I've had the pleasure of working with other technologies. I had a couple of years in Munich for an LNG project, finishing off that nicely in Spain, south of Spain, in the Cádiz area. Great experience for a relatively young engineer, and this is kind of the opportunities that you've had in the energy sector, and that are gonna continue in the energy sector. I think is to look at projects globally. So a little bit later on, moving on to maybe 2008, I had a pleasure of working a few years in London, setting up the Aker company, being part of that team, raising an organization that was set up because there were not enough engineers in Norway to deliver all the projects we were forecasting that were going to be developed. So that was again a fantastic time. I had my family there, and certainly at that time London was a great place to be, and those years I'll probably never forget. And then moving back to Norway again, I've always had a real passion for renewables, for environmental. I saw that offshore wind was really taking off, and I had the pleasure of looking at a few opportunities, and then that was kind of the start to my career in renewables. So probably five years ago or something like that.
So just to understand, so all this career, all this description, it was only in Aker, or were you working for another company prior to that?
I had a couple of years after my studies in a shipyard on the Norwegian West Coast, and then I moved to Aker, or one of the previous Aker companies, Kerner at the time, back in 1998. So I've basically been all my career with Aker.
Okay, interesting. And as I understand, obviously, but we'll discuss a bit more in detail in a bit, but you're moving away from Aker as we speak, right?
Yeah.
Will we pay attention to your next gig? But just going back, because you mentioned that in 2008 or so, you were here in London. I'm based in London myself, and I agree it's a very energetic place. But can you tell us a bit on your experience on building that team? You mentioned that there weren't enough skilled people, I guess, or professionals in Norway. So how was that experience of building a team? What sort of traits you were looking at? And have you seen, I guess my second question would be, have you seen an increase in terms of talent, in terms of engineering within obviously the offshore oil sector, but also within the renewable sector? What has been that change in the last 10 years or so?
Yeah, I think remembering back, we built a team. We won a project that had, I think, 150 people on top with a team of, I think we were maybe 10 people when we won that job. So that was a fantastic achievement for the team. And certainly at that time, there were a lot of engineers in London capable of doing these kind of projects. I think we were saying that there were 20,000 engineers in London, or Greater London, having London as their workplace, devoted to the oil and gas sector. It's probably a little bit less today, but anyway, the resource pool is fantastic, and the great thing with London is that you have that flexibility. So there's always capability available. I think when we're now moving into another sector, I've certainly moved into offshore wind, and we see that. That some of those resources are clearly very relevant. When you look at the systems required for a wind farm of size, it's rotating machinery in the turbine. There is materials. There is procurement. There is electrical system. There is naval architecture, marine aspects. I think basically virtually all, there are even some utility systems on a substation. So I think virtually all of the different disciplines are similar. But the big difference is that a big oil and gas project, maybe having 2,000 people on top, whereas an offshore wind project just isn't empowering or requiring so many people. The investments could be similar of size. You're talking about $3 or $4 billion dollars of investment for a big project, but the number of engineers is slightly less.
Well, slightly less, okay. And you mentioned...
Well, dramatically less.
Dramatically, yeah, okay. Yeah. And you mentioned, so you made that transition still within Aker. Can you describe how did that transition happen? Was that something that you proposed, that they came with, to you with this new opportunity? And probably from a structural kind of view, what was going on in the market at the time, because obviously the last 2 years or so, it has been quite an increase, exponential growth in the offshore wind segment, for example. But what was happening at the time? Was Aker being a bit visionaries of what was going on? And how did it come to you?
Yeah, I think we had a stint at offshore wind 10 or 15 years ago, building a few foundations for Germany. So that was kind of a starting point. But then again, renewables is nothing new to the Aker system. Aker had the products delivered when Norway was electrified more than 100 years ago for hydropower. So it wasn't an entirely new business. But I think it's fair to say that when I started looking at this 5 or 6 years ago, we probably didn't see the size and the speed that this will take. So we started off looking at what was the main skill sets of Aker and how that is best suited to the products needed for offshore wind. And I think it was quickly realized that particularly floating offshore wind was relevant, and made some investments in technology company Principle Power, and then had an opportunity to look at project from a developer point of view, and that's really where I found most of the attractiveness in terms of my role heading up the business development and being at the forefront of providing new projects to the company. So that was a great time.
Yeah, fascinating. And in terms of, maybe we can just fast track going back to the present. Obviously, 2020 has been quite a challenging year, but at the same time, what we're seeing is an acceleration in the renewable investment. Maybe zooming into the European Union, what has been the role that regulation is playing, and each country is playing, in particular Norway, right? So can you describe a bit to our listeners what has been the help, and maybe even that relationship between the regulatory side of things, but also the cost side of things? I think that they go kind of hand in hand. And what's advantage now of offshore wind versus other type of energy-related sources?
Yeah, that's a big question. We're now seeing that offshore wind has taken a major place in a number of countries. England, Scotland is starting to develop things. France, Denmark, Holland, Germany, Ireland is starting off. So this is clearly a play that is going to be of size, and there's no holding back, even though there could be regulatory challenges in some of these countries. Then there are so many countries that are pursuing this in parallel. So I'm just confident that the speed is just going to accelerate, and we will see even more activity. If I'm going to focus in on Norway a little bit, I think I see three major challenges for Norway. I see that there is a trend. There is a European shift. Europe is going to invest. I think it's about a fourth of their investments in the next few years are going to be devoted into renewables. Some 750 billion euros are going to be spent. So clearly there is a huge drive, and the role that the EU has played has been instrumental. We also see that there is a change in the US. I think the US is gonna come back and regain some of the lost territory over the last 4 years, and it's going to be really exciting to see how projects are going to accelerate on the West Coast, and I certainly hope that places like California and Northwoods are going to take on projects as well. related to oil and gas. You know, it's the by far the single most important economy for Norway, and it's going to remain that for the foreseeable future. But there is a risk, you know, with having all those balls in all those eggs in one basket. We've seen this year that the biggest oil and gas producer in EU, Denmark, has now put an end date to their oil and gas production. Ending oil and gas production in 2050 is going to put a lot of pressure on other countries. The reality is that oil and gas production in Denmark is still very small compared to both Norway and the UK. I mean, I think they have about 5% of the Norway annual production and 10% of the UK. But it's gonna put some pressure on these countries, and in particular for Norway. You know, there is a need to take upon the energy shift. There is a need to look at what are we going to produce after oil. What are we going to how are we going to capture on the knowledge, on the capability that Norway has in a role where or in a time where there is significant expertise and capability in the Norwegian supply chain. You know, if the UK are going to live with the Paris Agreement limiting temperature rise to 1.5 or 2 degrees, they're going to reduce their gas consumption by 90%. And what is that going to do to Norway? How is that going to influence our role as a leading energy nation in Europe? Are we going to sit back and let other take that role, or is there an interest for Norway to invest now in projects and ensure that there will be a future beyond oil and gas? Those are the things we need to ask ourselves, and we've got to push our government in order to make the framework for.
Now, you mentioned, I mean, there are just so many interesting nuggets that you just shared. Obviously, the size of the investment pie is just huge. And I agree with you. With the new administration in the U.S., we will see further development of these technologies. But going back to Europe for a bit, so how do you see then that role? Because I guess it's not surprising. There's so much societal pressure, investor pressure, and even governmental pressure for the super majors and you know, even independents, oil companies, to migrate, right, to decarbonize. So how do you see that working? I mean, obviously, the Shells and Totals and Equinors, they're investing heavily into offshore wind and solar, etc. But how do you see the future of that interaction, of that sweet spot between renewables and oil and gas companies?
Yeah, that's it's an exciting question. The question is, I think, will these oil and gas players, will they be the winners when the preferred source of energy will come from electricity? I think the role of the Vattenfalls and the Ørsteds and the Iberdrolas of this world, it's fairly similar to what they've done to what the future holds. The question is, what are oil and gas companies going to do? We see what seem to be two slightly different strategies from Equinor and from the Aker system, where one is devoted to remain an oil and gas producer like Aker BP, setting up a separate entity for offshore wind with the launch of the IPP for Aker Offshore Wind in the summer. The other one is still having the renewable production within the core business or within the mother company as an Equinor. I'm not sure that we've seen the end story of that. I think there will be winners and losers. I'm not going to give my predictions on that, but I think that the energy companies in the future will be very different to what we see today. With the pace that this industry is going at, it's going to be very different.
Totally, I agree, and that definitely resonates with what BP has announced. Well, all the European super majors has announced major net zero commitments of some kind. But if we, because you mentioned a couple of examples of what Europe is doing, Denmark and the Netherlands, etc. What about other parts of the world? How do you see this, especially the offshore wind technology and industry, tapping into developing areas? You know, I'm from Latin America myself. Can you see at some point in the near future those markets developing, even Africa and Southeast Asia?
Absolutely. The beauty of offshore wind is that wind and solar is today the most cost efficient form of new energy production. There is no other energy sectors that or energy sources that can provide electricity to the world at the same cost level. So that's a great starting point. And also the renewable aspect is what is catching your eye in the first instance. But you know, I think if you go to places that are not fully electrified now, they could be that they're going straight into renewable technologies like solar and offshore wind, and we might as well see projects that are coming in to play a role in an isolated energy system. There could be energy storage combined with the production from a non-regulated renewable source that could come into play in the not too distant future. And I would like to put out an example. There is a small island on the west coast of Norway, outside of my hometown, called Utsira, and they're now setting up a battery bank to ensure that they are less dependent on the power cable from shore. So if there is a power outage from that cable, they can run the entire society with production from. They have two wind turbines on the island and a battery bank, and that is okay. It's very small scale. You're only talking about a few megawatts of capacity, but still, it's an indication of where this could go. And if you're combining that with a hydrogen or ammonia, you know, you have a sustainable full energy source that is really set for the future.
Yeah, it's so interesting, right? It's about the combination of these different sources and technologies and how they can work together. So if that's the case, what do you see are the main challenges then for especially the offshore wind to work in, especially in places like Africa? Like what about the grid there? What would be the challenge, for example?
Well, energy storage, of course, is the obvious one. There isn't battery capacity to take upon any large scale offshore wind project today. So that will probably remain a challenge. And then there are a few initiatives in order to bridge that gap. And I'm confident that. That bridge will be crossed. So the question is: will you store through heating water and then distributing that later on? Will you use excess power to produce hydrogen? I don't think we have all those answers. But with the pace that the industry is going at, we will not be short of opportunities to deliver. You know, we have enough space most places to develop projects, and this is what the consumer requires: renewable power at an affordable price.
Yeah, totally agree. So maybe to wrap up, you do sound very optimistic about the opportunities. Can you mention then maybe a bit, even vaguely, of what sort of opportunities then you're going to be pursuing after, you know, this long stint at Aker? So what are you planning to do? If you can describe it just a bit.
Yeah, I'm certainly devoted to offshore wind and to renewables. So I'm going to stay in this business, and I believe that there are enough opportunities. What is out there is a future that is looking pretty good. If we're zooming in back on Norway, you know, there. I hope there will be projects coming out next year, and it will be great to see if there is a, if there could be a role in maturing some of those projects. And the reality is, you know, with a strong Norwegian supply chain with relevant products, then you've got to do something that is anchored and also showing that there are opportunities for the supply chain, for the local environment, for the local community, in delivering these projects, because none of these big energy projects are going to be lifted if there isn't a community support.
Yeah, a local chain. Fascinating. So maybe to finalize, what would then your last advice maybe for young people that are entering university, even if they're in geoscience, what would you say to them? Hey, there is a future. Well, how can they use their skills, even if they're already in the oil and gas? What would you tell them? What's your, let's say, optimistic message for the new generation?
I will always recommend the younger generation to get either a degree or to work your way up through the industry. There is enormous amount of opportunities. Having that basic skill set is always gonna present opportunities. So I would encourage all the coming generation and also younger engineers, you know, to stay in the business, to stay in the energy sector, and to see how you can grasp the opportunity with based on the knowledge base that you already have.
Yeah, as you mentioned, right, big changes, but big opportunities as well. Well, with that, I wanted to thank you, Knut. It's been a great conversation. I think our listeners will definitely enjoy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure. Yeah,
thank you. If you like this episode, please subscribe and give us a like. It really is important for us. This episode was produced by Julio César Fernández.